You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, yes, we are solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, it is Friday. It's Fri-yay, Boomer. Fri-yay. And Boomer's on the board. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great.
Good. We got the Fri-yay explosion.
We got an explosion.
Hit
yes,
it.
We do.
Fri-yay! Okay. Good. All right. Well, you doing all right?
Yeah, doing good. I got some new tech going up today.
You got some serious new tech going. So we're streaming everywhere in the world, right?
We're streaming everywhere. If you want to look at Right Side Radio Instagram, I put it back up on YouTube. It's on our website. It's on our Facebook page. It's everywhere right now.
Lord. So they're literally watching the Right Side Studio from any angle right now, it seems like.
Any angle. Wherever you are, like you say, wherever you is, there we is.
That's right. Wherever you is, there we is. How many cameras do I have in here? I mean,
we got like five right now? Five cameras?
God almighty. We just figured out basically I'm not allowed to scratch myself at all.
Nope.
Because I can be seen from every angle now. there's that. All right, hey, listen, we got a great show for you. I mean, lots of stuff lined up. So here's the deal. And by the way, Boomer, the banners look incredible on the live stream right now. I didn't know that was there.
I know. I wanted it to be a surprise.
Well, call me surprised.
Surprise.
So, yeah. Hit the applause. I think you deserve it.
I get the applause button.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank
Boomer, you're the best, man. This show is not going to work without you. So here's the deal. We got a huge show for you late on today. At 3 p.m. today, State Senator Arthur Orr will be on with us. Senator Orr has been in the legislature now he's in his fourth term. He is in leadership in the Alabama State Senate, is a budget chairman. We're going to talk to him about the massive surpluses they have and his recent comments that some of that needs to go back to the people of the state. I appreciate that sentiment, and we'll talk to State Senator Arthur Orr about finances. He specifically chairs the education budget, so we're going to take that into a long thread that will go straight to the next call we're going to have, a national known figure who appears on Fox News and various national media outlets on a regular basis. Has been on this show once before, Dr. Corey DeAngelis. Dr. DeAngelis is with the American Federation for Children. He's a huge school choice advocate. He is literally considered to be one of the top national advocates for school choice. And we're proud to have him on the show today at 4 p.m. So you're going to want to hear that interview. Last time he was on with us, it became one of our top podcasts. And so there's that. And then I got a triple dipper filled with stuff. So hit it, bud.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you have got to know as we run today's show. So the first one, right out the gate, we're going to talk about the Griner trade. All right, so Brittany Griner is home. How did that trade go? Well, we'll talk about it. In fact, my monologue will cover some of that in just a moment. But the Griner trade, that's number one of the Triple Dipper. Number two, we're going to have the two interviews and the stuff that I've got as my usual resources. School money, school choice. We'll talk about that as number two in the Triple Dipper. School money, school choice. And then number three, oh man, in case you didn't see it, the second dump of Twitter documents came out yesterday. So number three on the Triple Dipper, shadow bans. It's funny, I seem to recall there being testimony under oath in Congress, where basically they said, there's no such thing as shadow bans. We've got pictures of the shadow bans. Thank you very much. So, yeah, number three on the Triple Dipper, shadow bans. You're going to want to hear that. But let me jump over to my comments here. So let me ask you this. Did you ever see the movie Wonder Woman, the one that came out in the last few years? Now, the main character, Wonder Woman, in that movie was on a desperate mission to find and destroy Ares, the god of war, because of all the damage and destruction he was causing. It was basically a good versus evil movie, the kind that, spoiler alert here, made you feel good about the ending. But there was another movie that I saw a few years before that. It was a Nicolas Cage movie, and I had no idea what I was getting into when I started to watch it. I kept waiting for the moment when it would become some kind of a redeemable experience. It never came. The movie was dark, it was evil, it was tragic, and it sort of left the viewer feeling sort of helpless. I had no idea going into it. For some reason, I was under the impression that it was going to be one of those kind of tongue-in-cheek action movies where crazy stuff happens. Well, to say there was nothing lighthearted about the movie Lord of War is an understatement. Some of y'all may have seen it. Lord of War, the movie, told the story of a guy named Yuri Orlov, a Ukrainian refugee who at the beginning of the movie witnesses a mobster kill several others with automatic weapons, but instead of being repulsed by the murders, Yuri, who was played by Nicolas Cage, he realizes there's money to be made if he can find a way to get guns in the hands of the mob. So over time, Yuri Orlov in the movie went from being a petty thief selling guns out of the trunk of his car to an international arms merchant who supplied anyone and everyone, regardless of their cause or whether they were legitimate governments or terrorists. Sometimes he even supplied both sides of a conflict with arms to kill each other. He didn't care. He just did it for the money. It mattered not to him how many innocents died because of the services and products he supplied. In one major gun-running operation towards the end of the movie that went bad, Yuri lost his brother, who simply wanted out of the business. The same Liberian warlord who killed his brother then used the weapons from the shipment that he received to massacre an entire village of innocent people. Over time, in the movie, Yuri's soul became so dark that nothing brought relief. Nothing mattered. Just the next job. His wife and children left him, his parents disowned him, and in one of the final scenes, he's confronted by a character who had been after him in the movie for years, who, realizing that Yuri was virtually untouchable because he was connected to all these underworld characters in and out of government, just looked at him and said, "Well, I would tell you to go to hell, but I think you're already there." Like I said, it was a dark movie. It's kind of one that I really wish I hadn't watched. Good thing it was fiction. Or was it? It turns out that the truth is often stranger than fiction, and that fiction is often inspired by the truth. There are those that say that the movie Lord of War with Nicolas Cage was actually inspired by a guy named Victor Boot. If you haven't already heard, President Biden announced yesterday that WNBA basketball player Brittany Griner was released from Russian custody. Brittany Griner, someone who most of us had never even heard of, is an American citizen who traveled to Russia for an exhibition basketball game and was detained by Russian authorities at customs for having cannabis products in her luggage. The sentence was way beyond what was necessary, and Brittany Griner, an activist who just 2 years ago refused to stand up for the U.S. national anthem, well, she became a prisoner in a Russian penal camp with an 18-year sentence. The Biden administration worked through channels, and after 10 months, they secured her release in exchange for this guy named Victor Boot, an international arms dealer who was known by his nom de guerre literally as the Merchant of Death. Now, I'll be honest, I'm glad Brittany Griner's home, and I hope that she'll have a greater appreciation now for the country that just made what seems to be a very lopsided trade to secure her freedom. Victor Boot is a man with a dark soul. His ability to walk freely is a threat to good people everywhere. Boot is a former Soviet military officer from Tajikistan. His early life is largely unknown. Prior to his arrest in 2008, he had become one of the most wanted men in the world. He was known for being able to get around arms embargoes and to deliver anything, anywhere, anytime, and blamed for fueling wars from Africa to the Balkans to Asia. U.S. prosecutors deemed him one of the world's most successful and sophisticated arms traffickers, and one former U.S. attorney said that he had armed some of the most violent conflicts around the globe. Victor Boot was finally caught in Thailand, where he was attempting to sell surface-to-air missiles to Colombian FARC guerrillas, which they intended to use to kill U.S. troops. The deal was for 100 SAM missiles, but luckily U.S. DEA agents were working undercover, and the Merchant of Death was finally taken down after 20 years of fueling controversy and murder around the world. He was convicted in 2010 of conspiracy to kill U.S. nationals, conspiracy to kill U.S. officers and employees, conspiracy to acquire and use anti-aircraft missiles, and conspiracy to provide material support or resources to a designated foreign terrorist organization. Y'all, Victor Boot is a man without a conscience, and he was sentenced to 25 years in a federal penitentiary until yesterday, when he walked free after less than 11 years. 11 years, despite the murderous swath he cut across the globe. You see, in all the time that the U.S. has had Boot in custody, Russian President Vladimir Putin has been demanding his release. Why? I mean, the man's not even a native Russian. He's from Tajikistan, a former Soviet bloc nation on the northern side of Afghanistan. Why does Putin care about this guy? There can only be one of two reasons why Putin cares about Victor Boot. Either one, Boot is useful to Putin, or two, he knows things about Russia that Putin wants to have contained. Ask yourself, why would any self-respecting government leader anywhere demand the return of someone who has documented evidence against him of war crimes, terrorism, murder, and arms trafficking? I believe it can be answered by the first of the two reasons I just cited. To Putin, Victor Boot, the merchant of death, he's useful. One former DEA agent went on the record yesterday to say this. You ready? Quote, trading Boot away wouldn't just be a slap in the face of the law enforcement officers and operatives who labored to bring Boot down, many of them risking their lives in the process. It would also pose a grave threat to the national security of the United States and its allies. He went on to predict that if released, Boot could become another Russian asset, planning and executing clandestine supply missions in support of Russian proxies like the Wagner Group in Africa, Venezuela, and other hotspots. And there you have it, folks. If you're not familiar, go look up the Wagner Group. This is the alternative Russian army. Some say the head of the Wagner Group is more powerful in Russia than Putin himself. The Wagner Group are guns for hire, men who do whatever is needed without having to carry the flag of their nation into a difficult spot. They are proxy soldiers, not governed by ethics and the ability to have a man like Victor Boot acting as their arms supplier and helping to fund their activities could be very lucrative. Bottom line, I'm glad Brittany Griner's home, but this feels very out of balance. The merchant of death, the lord of war, was just given his freedom, and we have no confidence that his time in prison reformed him at all. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, we're going to break it down some more. But Victor Boot, make no mistake, that movie Lord of War was inspired by Victor Boot. And the movie probably wasn't even near as dark as the soul of the man himself. And there are more people that have died at the hands of his actions. And he lined his pockets on death. And we let him walk free yesterday. And I can't figure it out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, by the way, Boomer, you've got, so we're streaming like on just all kinds of formats right now. So tell them again where all they can find stuff, all right?
So you can actually, yeah, we're streaming everywhere right now. So we're live video streaming on Facebook, which you can go on Facebook and look up Right Side Radio, and then it'll pop up. On Instagram, our handle is Right Side Radio, and it is streaming there as well, video streaming there. It is on YouTube, same thing, Right Side Radio, and then also on our website, rightsideradio.org, and you click on the live stream, and you can either live stream video or right under it, live stream audio.
Wow.
Yeah, lots of live streaming going on.
All God's children are streaming right now. So that's amazing, man.
It's just all over the place.
I'm telling you. Well, by the way, we have, this is the, like, I'm pretty sure we could launch a space shuttle from this command center we call the Right Side Studio. I mean, I just look around sometimes and I'm amazed. And by the way, the power bill here at the studio is like twice what it is at my house.
Lots of power being pulled.
That's a lot of power being pulled. But yeah, we've got any number of ways you can watch and or listen to the show. Also on the website, rightsideradio.org, you can just live stream the audio if you want to. I've had several folks tell me that as they're driving around, if they get outside the overly broad range of our AM/FM capabilities, that they just go to the app or to the website, click on the audio and listen to it that way. In fact, I know for a fact that my friend, former state senator Tripp Pittman, was listening to the show down in Baldwin County yesterday before he called into the show. So that's, listen, like I always say, no matter where you are in the big wide world, go to the World Wide Web and click on one of our options now. And no matter where you is, there we is. There it is. I got to start using that phrase again. I used to use it all the time.
Yeah, you got to bring it back. Bring it back.
It's back. All right, we'll do that. a lot of other stuff on that website, too. Let me just tell you, man, that website gets more robust by the day. How much stuff can you carry on one website? I mean, it's like getting packed. But anyway, we got plenty of stuff there about the folks here at Right Side Radio. We are a standalone organization. If you're listening to us on the radio, we don't work per se for those radio stations. We are an independent organization, 501c3, actually. Right Side Radio is a 501c3 organization. We are supported on advertising sales and on charitable contributions. And so all our information is on the website, and we've got plenty of things on there, too. I write a weekly op-ed that gets published in a variety of newspapers. They're all on there. I got a recommended reading list of books we thought were meaningful. They're on there. Photo gallery, contact points on there. And then the Right Side store is on there. If you want a coffee mug, you want a Right Side t-shirt, or you want some Right Side socks, we got them. They're all on there. So check it out, all at rightsideradio.org. All right, I'm pretty stoked about today's show. We got some great guests, but the topics that we're going to cover down on, not the least of which is number one in the Triple Dipper, the Griner trade. So Brittany Griner, I guess my first question is, how many people had ever heard of Brittany Griner, really, before all this happened? I hadn't. I did not know either that she was, you know, somewhat of an activist. She's one of those athletes who did not love her own country enough to feel like she should have to stand. In fact, she actually spoke against the idea of being on the court when the national anthem was played. She's got an alternative lifestyle, which I guess makes her a darling to some. She's also had a domestic violence report filed against her just in the last few years. So, you know, she's got her own issues in life, and she has not been a fan of her own country. Her own country just went to great lengths to get her home. I hope she's going to come home with a different perspective. So there's that. We're going to break all that down in a few minutes, right after this next break. Boomer, I've already got John from Huntsville asking how many downloads we got. Brother, you're up again. In fact, today's your last day, bud.
Today's
your last day.
Yeah, last day.
100,000 downloads. Where are we at?
Oh, man. We are at 99,450. So I got about 550 to go, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Before the end of Saturday.
All right. So, yeah, because that's true, because we'll get these.
Show up.
You're actually going to get Monday, because what's going to happen is some folks will download for their drives on what came out of Friday's show.
What came out on Friday's show. So
Monday morning, we'll see what you got.
See what we got.
Ha.
Here it comes.
Make sure you figure out where I like my fritters.
What fritters do you like?
I like apple fritters.
Apple fritters.
And some of the best ones around are at local bakeries, I'm just telling you. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're coming right back. Y'all stay tuned. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. I'm talking about this show goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, You got parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. And we do not, by the way, we do not take that for granted. I was just talking to someone this morning about how in a year and a half, this show has done more than I ever would have imagined. Not the least of which is hiring you, Boomer, to come in here and work with us every day.
Pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome. But yeah, came out of nowhere, never having done any radio before, and God's just opened doors like we had not expected. So proud of it, pleased for it, and want to be a good steward of it. So anyway, all right, listen, number one of the Triple Dipper, the Griner trade. So I said it earlier, I don't even know who Brittany Griner was, all right? I should say is. I did not know who she was before. I don't know who she is really now. I know of her now because of all the notoriety that's happened in the last 10 months. But here's the story. I mean, just to catch you up, details you probably already know, but I got to lay the predicate for the rest of this conversation. And you're welcome, by the way, if you're welcome to call in, if you got a comment you want to make about the Brittany Griner trade, I think I'd like to hear them. Text or call right now. The number is 833-687-4448. That's 833-687-4448. Sometimes we call it 833-68-RIGHT. That's what it is. Your thoughts on the Brittany Griner trade. So, story, I got this one off an alternative website. It's called Bounding Into Sports. Storyline came out yesterday. Olympian and WNBA champion Brittany Griner. So apparently she was an Olympian. Didn't want to stand for the national anthem, but she was willing to go and represent the United States in the Olympics. Anyway, she was arrested and sentenced to 9 years of hard labor in a Russian penal camp for bringing cannabis vape cartridges into the country. She's been exchanged with Russian national and notorious arms dealer Viktor Bout as the result of a deal between the United States and Russia in order to secure her freedom. Griner, who spent 10 months in Russia already, was confirmed by Fox News late last night to have been released and turned over to American custody so she could be returned home. Biden, when he gave his press conference, went on to also, you know, basically say and celebrate the news as a diplomatic victory. However, not once during the speech did he mention at all that the U.S. government handed over a dangerous international criminal as part of the deal. Kind of left that part out. But that's the part that's kind of sort of put the taint on this thing. I mean, you look at it and go, I get it. A life for a life. Get an American. Every one of these American citizens being detained abroad wrongfully needs to be brought home. I mean, we still got, though, another guy there who I'm going to get into in just a minute. But the very idea that she got 9 years in a Russian penal camp, I mean, if they were that concerned about it, they should have, you know, detained her, seized her baggage, and then shipped her raggedy self home and been done with it. But no, it was Russia. They wanted to make a point because here we were beginning to fund the war on the Ukrainian side. Right at the same time, keep in mind, that's where we are. It was 10 months ago. What month was that? That'd be February. When did the war start? Oh, yeah, February. And there was a lot of international condemnation led by the United States to include, by the way, funding the Ukrainian army. And next thing you know, Brittany Griner in prison, convicted. What does she have on her possession? Cannabis vapes. Now, by the way, was she breaking the law? Yeah, what a stupid thing. You took them with you? Really? That's what you do? You go to foreign countries and you take illegal substances with you? For the love. Russia especially? Come on. It's not like you were going to Canada. But she did, and nonetheless, 9 years, everybody knows that was excessive. Everybody knows that was Putin leaning in hard. Well, the idea, though, that a life for a life, bring the American home, please. I mean, bring the American home. I'm good with that. I am good with that. But doesn't it feel lopsided? And I can't help but look at this and go, the guy they call the merchant of death, the one who is literally on the record of having supplied arms to terrorists and to, help fund the wars in Angola and, and narco traffickers and drug cartels. And the bottom line is this. He was an awful individual responsible for the deaths of thousands, perhaps tens of thousands or more, who literally funded and fueled discontent and unrest all over the world. and pocketed millions and millions and millions of dollars at the expense of innocent lives. And we traded him for a WNBA basketball player. I get it. A life for a life. But doesn't this feel out of balance to you? Story on Fox News. U.S. basketball star Brittany Griner has arrived back in the United States. Yes, she has. Friday is the first time Griner has set foot in the U.S. since she was incarcerated by Russia 10 months ago. The deal was finalized after Russia showed that it was unwilling to free another U.S. citizen named Paul Whelan. If you're not familiar, Paul Whelan is a former Marine, an Iraqi war veteran, arrested in 2018 for allegedly conducting intelligence work. The White House said Whelan was convicted in 2020. So Paul Whelan has been over there since 2018, accused of something he swears he had nothing to do with. Here's the way the Biden administration described the negotiations. Karine Jean-Pierre says, this was not a choice for us. It wasn't? So the terms were dictated? Is that what we're saying? This was not a choice for us on which American to bring home. It was a choice between bringing home one American or none. Okay, so basically Putin dictated the terms. So what I'm hearing there is that the Biden administration went to the table taking the kowtow approach, taking the head down, please, sir, may I have another approach. They were told what to do by Putin is what it sounds like. Now, one White House reporter asked Karine Jean-Pierre, this was someone who had conspired to sell weapons that he knew would have been used to kill Americans, American drug agents. Law enforcement officials may not be happy with his release. What is the president's message to them and to others who say essentially this was a bad deal? Karine Jean-Pierre said, the president felt a moral obligation to bring Brittany home. There was an opportunity to do that. It was either Brittany or no one at all, and we're not going to apologize for that. Okay, stiff upper lip. Let's make sure we put the shiny, you know, lipstick on this thing, because that's all they got. Boomer, have I got a call or no? Okay. But here's Paul Whelan. Story also on Fox News. And this is, it's heartbreaking. If you've seen Paul Whelan, by the way, there are videos. He's had the opportunity to appear before cameras, which is really just a way for Putin to make sure that America gets a thumb in the eye. So President Biden's prisoner exchange with Russia secured the release of Brittany Griner, but left U.S. Marine veteran Paul Whelan in Russian custody. Whelan has been in Russian custody since 2018 when he was sentenced to 16 years in prison on espionage charges. Griner had been in Russian custody since February after authorities discovered vape cartridges containing a small amount of cannabis oil in her luggage. Biden's administration had initially sought the release of both Griner and Whelan in exchange for notorious arms dealers Victor Boot, a Russian citizen serving prison sentence in America, known colloquially as the Merchant of Death. Whelan's brother, David Whelan, congratulated Griner on her release in a Thursday statement, but lamented the Biden administration's failure to release his brother. His words were, she'll be reunited with her family. Brittany's free. Paul is still a hostage. Notice, by the way, he didn't say a prisoner. He said a hostage. But how many more times do I have to write that, he continued. Despite the possibility there might be an exchange without Paul, our family is still devastated. I can't even fathom how Paul will feel when he learns. Paul has worked so hard to survive nearly 4 years of this injustice. And by the way, this is the second time that the Biden administration has negotiated to bring somebody home from Russian imprisonment, and it did not include Paul Whelan. But we can give up one of the most wanted men in the world. But Russia's like, no, we're not going to do that. They don't have anything to say what Paul Whelan actually did. They just convicted him upon their own suspicions. We, on the other hand, have video of him trying to traffic surface-to-air missiles, Victor Boot. Unbelievable. I got a caller on the line, bud. Let me grab that real quick. I'm sorry. Line 5, Mac from Athens. Hey, Mac, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, Phil. Listen, I just heard the voice of John Bolton. He said that in 2018, when Trump was president, that they had the negotiations on the table for this Whelan versus Boot.
Yeah.
And Mr. Trump said, I'm sorry, he's too dangerous to turn loose.
Oh, the boot was too dangerous? Yeah. I believe it.
Yeah. He refused to make that deal for a Marine in 2018. I just thought it's just in stark contrast to what has happened.
Well, it's a stark contrast between the two administrations, that's for sure. I mean, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
Putin sets the terms with the Biden administration, apparently.
It seems so.
Hey,
well, we had the same offer, and Mr. Trump just said we can't do it. He's too dangerous.
Yeah. Well, I think we're gonna see in the days to come, man. Hey, Mac, thanks for the call. Appreciate you. All right. Well, listen, Boomer, I tell you what, let's go ahead and take the break. We'll come back from this and wrap this section up. But I had to spend some time on this. To me, this was one of those things that the more I watched on the news, the more I was unsettled by it. Am I glad she's home? Sure. Of course I am. I don't want her to be over there in a penal camp in Russia, especially with, you know, a 9-year sentence on something that was arguably legal in most of the United States. However, giving up Victor Boot? I don't get it. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stand by. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid, conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Well, let me jump over to the phones there. Is that line one? Is that Jeff from India? Jeff, how you doing today, man?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, Phil. How's about yourself?
I'm doing fine. It's a Friday. Fri-yay around here.
And I'm not working today, so it is a great day.
There you go. All right. Well, good deal. So you're not having to fight with Nashville traffic today. That's good.
No, I'm doing getting a car, mom's car serviced in Owensboro Hyundai.
All right. What's on your mind today, man?
We got Brittany Griner back. And if they want to get, what was his name, Paul Whelan, I think?
Yeah.
I can get him back in a week if they want me to.
Okay.
If they let me, all we need to do is I've got to tell him that he needs to become trans or thinking about being trans and that he can't get his necessary medicine or surgery in Russia.
Oh,
we need to get him an American flag and a lighter so that he can light it on fire. And then the next thing we need to do is have him say he renounces diesel vehicles and then he wants to work for electric green companies. And I guarantee you, we'll have marches in Washington trying to get him back. They may even take Brittany back and trade for him.
Oh, I think my favorite part of that whole thing was not just all the intersectionalities you just named, but that they might actually trade Brittany back for him. That's hilarious.
Well, you got to go for which is more important, a lesbian or a trans? I mean, you got to go more woke.
Well, now you're creating a civil war inside the LGBTQIA+ yada 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 community there.
Who's left out of that list anyway? I don't know. I don't know either because it's got everybody else is in that list. I don't know who's not out.
The acronym gets bigger every time I see it. I can't keep up. I don't think they can keep up. It's
well,
but
I feel discriminated against if I'm not in there somewhere.
Well, oh my gosh. Well, Jeff, I don't know. We'll see, man. But hey, let me ask you this on being sort of serious here. Does the trade for Victor Boot and Brittany Griner, does it feel out of balance to you? Like, wow, we just gave away the biggest international arms dealer in the world.
Well, I'm thinking Kamala Harris could have made a better deal than that.
Wow. Okay.
How dumb can you be? It's like, well, we got this basketball player here, and then we got this notorious arms dealer. You know, it's like we're trading, you know, a mass murderer for somebody who's jaywalked.
That's about right. Yeah. That's about the level of the two offenses.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know, man.
If you can't get at least a 2-for-1 out of that, then, you know, well, you got to figure every deal he makes is kind of pretty.
I look at it and think, okay, they should have gotten both Waylon and Brittany Griner at the very least. And to me, it was like the arms dealer for the so-called espionage conviction for Waylon, and let's throw Griner in there as gravy. But somehow or another, it equated in Putin's mind and in Biden's mind that it was a fair trade for Brittany Griner for Victor Boot. I mean, it's just weird, man. There's more to it. I know there's more to it.
Well, it's a wonder we got as much as we did, actually. I mean, you got to remember, Joe Biden has been compromised by Putin. You know, so, I mean, he probably just could have said, hey, you know, release this guy. Oh, okay, yes, master. You know, everybody wants to say Trump was under Putin's thumb, but, you know, when your son gets like, what was it, $4 million from the wife of the mayor of Moscow or whatever, you know, for something? I mean, what was that for anyway?
I don't know that we'll ever know. Well, then again, I think we all know. All right.
Have all a good one, Phil.
Hey, Jeff, take care, buddy. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Listen, what's interesting, though, is the bipartisan calls for this being reviewed are out there. So I got a story here from Daily Wire. And Boomer, you got a call for me? I will take that in a second. Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat from New Jersey, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, slammed President Biden Thursday for releasing notorious terrorist Victor Boot. This is a quote from Menendez. He said, "This should be a moment of deep reflection for the United States to recognize we have a serious problem with hostage taking of Americans. The Russians and other regimes that take American citizens hostage cannot pretend there is equivalence between the Brittany Griners of the world and people like Victor Boot. Nothing could be further from the truth. We must stop inviting dictatorial and rogue regimes to use Americans overseas as bargaining chips and do better at encouraging American citizens against traveling to places like Russia." But basically he said, "My heart goes out also to the families of other Americans in Russian prisons and labor camps, including Paul Whelan. They have my renewed commitment to try and bring them home." Anyway, the bottom line is he's saying this did not look like a good deal. Wow. Well, listen, let me take the last call I got before we hit the top of the hour. Hey, Boomer, I'll take that call for good. Line two, is that Sid? Sid from Huntsville. Sid, how you doing?
Doing good, yeah?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. What's on your mind?
I think if we really want to get right down to it and admit what went on with this trade, we have to admit that this was all political on his part. By doing what he did, he has three different groups that he has now that he'll be able to go to and say, "See what I did? You got to vote for me, and you got to vote for the Democrats." I think if anybody really wants to admit the truth, it was all a political move.
Well, Sid, you may be right, and I hate the idea of lives being traded for politics, but we will see, man. Hey, I'm up against the break. Sid, thanks for the call. You have a great weekend, all right?
Uh-huh.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, folks, that's enough of that. We're going to go ahead and leave that topic for now. I'm going to continue to have shaping opinions on this, but right now my main concern is this appears to be a very unbalanced deal, and the idea that Victor Boot is out walking free and able to make trouble again in the world is rather galling, to be honest with you. We're going to come right back with a new topic. We're going to switch gears. School money, school choice. We have literally almost $2 billion, billion with a B, that has to be spent that we had not planned on collecting, but it just came in. And so we're going to talk to State Senator Arthur Orr, one of the budget chairmen from our Alabama legislature, to find out what they intend to do with this. Will there be any tax relief? Are they looking at upfunding education? Are we going to see things done differently? Where does it all fall in the realm of school choice, potentially, to improve Alabama's horrible school education scores? State Senator Arthur Orr coming up next. Y'all stay tuned.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, we are solid, conservative, and just plain right. All right, we're switching gears now. We're in number two of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling this whole section School Money, School Choice. So we're going to wind up starting our conversation on the issue of funding, how much funding there is. And by the way, there's excess funding. With State Senator Arthur Orr, and we're going to end the discussion with Dr. Corey DeAngelis from American Federation for Children. He'll be calling in a little bit later. But right now, let me just introduce State Senator Arthur Orr has been serving in the Alabama State Senate now since 2006. He serves from the Decatur area, which is Alabama's third Senate district. He has a degree from Wake Forest, his law degree from the University of Alabama. He and I served together during my 8 years in there, and he has been a budget chairman now for a number of years, meaning he knows where all the fiscal bones are buried. Arthur Orr, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, Phil, good to be with you, and doing fine on a Friday. Ready to roll in the weekend.
Well, I think everybody is. Hey, thanks for making time for us today. Listen, there's a story broke out. I mean, it's not like it's new news, but it was kind of making the story rounds as of about 2 days ago. AL.com has it as Alabama lawmakers must allocate an extra $2.7 billion in unexpected education funding. Talk to us about the surplus funds that exceed what we thought was coming in. Are they one-time funds? Is it federal funds? What are we looking at here?
No, it's not federal funds. Now, it's a result of federal funds, and by that I mean, so this kind of large one-time pot of money, a lot of it was generated by the federal transfer payments that they made to individuals who went out and went shopping or saw their income go up due to raises, due to Joe Biden's inflation. So it is a phenomenon related to that, but they are truly state dollars over which we have the control and how we're going to appropriate it. But as you said, Phil, it's so important to remember this is just one-time money, and we've got to be very, very careful and not consider it as recurring revenue and revenues that we will be able to continue to spend. So we need to make sure that we do not overpromise in the process.
Well, I get that, but somewhere in there you just said that some of this is related to income increases, changes in the the social environment, so to speak. I know there were one-time monies being sent to individuals to spend, but we have seen basically an increase in revenue to the state, part of which will be sustainable, wouldn't it be?
Well, we hope so. It depends on whether we go into a situation where there is a recession. And if we're talking about recession, that means people are losing their jobs. That means the income taxes, of course, go down. And then they're not shopping as much because they're concerned about their employment or they're concerned about their financial health or future. So, therefore, sales taxes goes down. So, it's something we've just got to be very mindful towards as we go forward. And, we'll be making the budget, as you recall. It'll be voted on probably in May or June of this coming year in 23. But that same budget will last all the way. Sorry about the wind. I'm outside. That same budget will last all the way until September of 24. So we've got to be a little bit of a Nostradamus trying to predict what the financial state of the state will be well over a year after we pass that budget.
Well, and yeah, that's always the case. I mean, we always pass budgets a year in advance and hope for the best. And I can say this, though, when the Republicans took over in 2010, we pretty much ended the days of proration. We haven't had proration since that time, meaning that the budgets have been balanced and they have held each year because we put reserve accounts in place and things like that. And we did some streamlining early on. That being said, you're on the record in this AL.com article as saying that within this excess, which is $2.7 billion by one account, that you believe that some portion of that needs to go back to the people of the state, and you're recommending $400 to $500 million of that go back to the taxpayers. Talk to us about that. Do you see that as being systemic change, tax reform, or are you looking at one-time rebates or both?
No, we're looking at both. I think you do the larger pot due to this one-time phenomenon of the 2.7 that was attributed in the article. That goes back, you know, the $400 or $500 million. That would put roughly, Phil, $200 per taxpayer. And again, you get into the weeds on just people who paid in income taxes. Are they the ones eligible? Is it all filers? Are they eligible? You know, so where do you draw the line on who would receive a check? And that's something, you know, the body would have to determine. But I think that's a safe number, $400 or $500 million. And then on top of that, I think you've got to continue to push for permanent tax cuts. Now, I'm biased somewhat towards trying to help those on defined contribution plans, which would be our retirees that don't have the luxury of having a defined benefit plan, which in Alabama is not taxed. And so but the defined contributions, and that's your IRAs and 401ks, they are taxed by the state. And we passed a bill here in the 2022 session that I worked very hard on, sponsored with Representative Greer from the Florence area, and it passed. The first $6,000 is now tax-free. I want to keep bumping that number north. So more money for our retirees who are on these fixed incomes can get their money out of their savings account, their retirement savings account, tax-free. Another thing I think we need to do is look at the bottom end of the spectrum, and we've got I'll call it a nuisance tax down at the lower end on your first dollars of income at the 2% rate. I think we can afford to eliminate that. So you've got a minimum threshold that you're not paying taxes on your first couple thousand dollars of income. So that's something we're also looking at, and that's just me. Someone else may come with a better idea, and of course, that, as you know, in the legislative process, that could all be determined by the legislature and the governor.
Well, and you're right, and it's all malleable until it's actually finally signed off on by the governor. But that being said, since this is a surplus within the education budget, and for the benefit of our listeners, I say it quite often, but Alabama being one of the few states that has two budgets, we have the general fund, which is everything that runs the state and does all the things except for education, which is in the separate education budget where you are the chairman. These excess funds right now are sitting in the education budget. So would the tax relief have to come from education funding, or are you looking at anything that could cross over the lines?
I would have to defer to our general fund chairs on other things. As you know, we fund education very differently in Alabama. Most states rely on property taxes, which is a much more stable form of revenue for the government. The sales taxes and income taxes are very economically tied. So therefore, you know, if the economy's in the tank, that means the budget is certainly declining much more rapidly. It's kind of like a roller coaster. And then if the economy's going up, you're going up and very rapidly. So the property tax is being much more stable. But I'd have to defer to the general fund. One other point, the education budget, as you recall, has taken on a lot of responsibility from other state agencies that are traditionally housed in the general fund, such as the Department of Mental Health, Department of Human Resources, and others that, you know, we've taken on a large part of their burden from the general fund through the years.
And if I'm not mistaken, too, isn't part of the Medicaid for Kids, the CHIPS program, isn't that also housed within the education budget?
That is still in the general fund, but we do quite substantially other things. It's become divided between the general fund, I should say, and the education budget, but become kind of a, if it's related to children, we end up picking up the cost on the education budget side.
Well, all right. So right now we're looking at the potential for tax relief. You're looking at some measure of reform measures to actually reduce tax burdens overall for a long period of time. And then you're also looking at one-time rebates. What are the things, though, are you looking at within this surplus? We got about two minutes here. What are the things within this surplus then would you spend money on once it gets past that gate?
Well, I think we've got to create a savings account, Phil, that allows us to have some money that we are not relying on proration, a proration call about the from the governor. You know, I think that's one thing that we can certainly do. What would be in that account? I'd say $500-600 million, maybe more. And then we also need to look at having a situation where capital expenditures, one-time money, we've just got to be very shrewd about this money. Do we spend it on technology, one-time technology expenses, et cetera? So there are a lot of things on the table, Phil, and a little too early to start getting the pen out, but things are going on a list. And we'll see where we go. The bottom line is we cannot over-appropriate or over-commit on recurring expenses, like giving large pay raises that for the 25 budget, we may not have the money there to do it, to sustain it with. So we don't want to be seen as crawling back on our commitments.
No, and I get that. Well, hey, listen, last question for you, Arthur. Had Speaker-elect Nathaniel Ledbetter here in our studio about a week or so ago, and he said he expects a special session on the appropriation of certain funds. I think those may be COVID relief funds, actually, but do you foresee a special session on budget issues?
Not past just the ARPA funds that are pretty restricted on what we can spend it on. Last year, we had much more flexibility because that came from ARPA as well, the recovery plan. But we had a goodly amount that was related to loss in revenues that the state had real flexibility over. Now we don't have as much flexibility. It has to be spent on healthcare type things, broadband for students and things like that. So our hands are going to be really tied as far as how we can spend the money.
All right. All right. Well, more to come on this. State Senator Arthur Orr, a budget chairman representing District 3 in the Alabama State Senate. We appreciate your time. We want to stay tied to you on this one and get back with you again later on as it develops. All right.
Thank you, Phil. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks, man. You too. All right. Let's take a break, Boomer. We'll come right back. Sort of take that and spin off of it. One of the things we've got to watch, and we didn't dig into it because Arthur's not education policy. He's education funding. Too many people believe that funding is policy, and it's not. We're going to start developing the topic right now as we move forward here in the show. School money, school choice. Yeah, they're not always the same. Y'all stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, before I go any further, I got to tell you guys. So ZLA Solutions, you hear their ads on our show. Listen, they've been with us since this show began. And I was talking to them yesterday. These are friends of mine. And they have been doing an amazing job at putting people and jobs together. If you're looking for a job right now, let me just encourage you, go to their website, ZLAUSA.com. They've got great jobs posted all over North Alabama. You can find them, big-name employers, some of them with benefits, all of it. Check it out, ZLAUSA.com. But if you are an employer and you need people, it can be onesies and twosies, or it can be a entire shift of people you need to get staffed out. Blue collar, white collar, no collar, it don't matter. ZLA Solutions, that's what they do. That's their bread and butter. I mean, they help you with, they can help you with logistics, sorting and containment, warehousing. They do all kinds of things, but their bread and butter is really staffing. And they like to say, at ZLA, we don't make it, we make it better. That's their mission in life, is to help you make your business better. Check them out at ZLAUSA.com. And do me a favor, tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. So, hey, by the way, got to tell you, we have some guests already lined up for next week. You're going to enjoy this. We've got Senator Tommy Tuberville scheduled for Tuesday. He'll be on the show Tuesday. And then we've got Congressman Barry Moore will be on the show on Thursday. So already getting some of our folks from D.C. lined up. Very important, because the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, basically the budget or financing for our military, just passed the House yesterday. It has to go now to the Senate. It apparently did remove the vaccine mandate for the military. And the question now is, can they get it through the Senate that way? Well, it was a Democrat-controlled House still. I mean, Republicans have not yet taken the majority. That happens after the first of the year. So it was a Democrat-controlled House that did pass a budget with a lifting of the vaccine mandate. It remains to be seen what will happen in the Senate. And then, of course, the president still has to sign it. So there's a lot of ways to go. Yeah, I want to hear what Tuberville thinks about it, and I want to hear Congressman Barry Moore's reaction to it, among other things that are going on in D.C. So we'll be talking to them next week. All right, listen, as we move through this section here, I'm going to move through school money and school choice. Now, this $2.7 billion, I agree with one thing that Arthur Orr says, Senator Orr, a moment ago. This is not all sustainable. Some of this is one-time money. Some of this is like windfall money. And when you get a windfall, you look at, okay, how do I spend it effectively now, knowing I may not have it next year? So I get the pragmatism. He's a budget chairman. His job is to balance the budgets. But I also appreciate the fact, though, that he is looking for some means of giving something back, and that's important. However, the world of people in the education arena is already out there with their hands out right now. Article here from ABC 3340 that came out yesterday, talking about the same thing. Alabama lawmakers must find a place for an extra $2.7 billion. Well, local school systems are already saying, we've got ideas. We need to do these things. We need extra funds to provide services. We need to help with our technology. One former teacher said she believes it ought to go to providing relief for teachers in the classroom. I don't know what that means, except I think she means they want extra teachers or teachers' aides. She said she's the president, by the way, of it's Erica Hughes, president of the Central Alabama American Federation of Teachers, a teachers' union. Says it's time we put hands and feet back in the classrooms, because those are actually the people working with the children every day, says the union rep. Another one, a retired educator, says she believes, having worked as an educator for 28 years, that retired teachers ought to reap the benefits of these funds. Retirees should get a one-time cost of living adjustment, because I'm retired. And when I'm making retired, I'm still having to supplement with another job. I get it. But you know what? Every time you do those things, every time you hire somebody or give a raise, that's not a one-time. That stays in there for perpetuity. So the question now is, what are they going to do with it? They got to do something. $2.7 billion extra dollars. What a great problem to have. All right, we're going to continue this theme, start moving towards the idea of school choice. How did the schools in your area do on the latest school report card? We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. This show covers some ground, man. I'm talking about we're way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. And I got sidetracked there, Boomer. I was texting with the lovely Charlene. That was so it just dawned on me. Your thumb was up saying, "We're back on the air." And I'm like, I need to talk
oh, my
now.
Bad. Yeah, I got
to
go. I got
to
go.
Okay. Sorry, honey. I had to stop texting. All right. Listen, we're in this discussion right now. School money, school choice. That's what I'm calling this section of the Triple Dipper. So school money, school choice. How does that all come together? Well, see, some people think that the way you improve education is to keep throwing money at it. Not so. Not so. Now, you got to fund things, certainly. You got to staff them, certainly. They got to have facilities that are adequate, certainly. I'll never forget when I was in the legislature in the state Senate, I had some opportunity to give out education grants. A portion of the education budget, each legislator was allowed to give localized grants in their area. And people are always like, "Hey, Senator, you got some discretionary funds? Hey, Senator." I mean, I had things like the YMCA asking me for giving them some money. And I was like, come on, y'all. But then, you know, I used to give some here and some there. And I had one guy who literally in my district, who literally his thing was, you don't give much. You give a little bit here, a little bit there, so you can spread it out and see some people see you do something everywhere. I was like, no, you know what? Finally, I got to thinking, I want to be impactful. I realized one day that I had all kinds of different small towns in my district that I just grew to love. I mean, places like Altoona and Center and Cedar Bluff and Steele, little towns that just, you know, I just fell in love with them, and they just embraced Charlene and I, and I loved serving those people. I realized one day that Steele elementary school didn't have air conditioning. And I was like, what? How is that possible? Now, I didn't have the ability to put air conditioning in the whole building, but by golly, those kids do PE now in a gym that has air conditioning, because I was able to just go ahead and say, I'm not putting piddling grants out here and there. I'm going to take a big old chunk and just put it in one place and try to change some lives. Well, there's things like that that have to have funding. You have to improve the lot and life of some. But what I love is finding out that some schools who don't have a ton are doing well with what they got, and that some have local communities that do rally around them. And I recognize, too, the teachers' union, they hide behind, well, parental influence is so important, and we don't have much parental. I get it. I get it. So your PTA sucks. I get it. But the truth be told, one day Charlene and I were driving by, you know, someone's home, a residence, let's just call it that, and it was so obvious they don't do a thing to take care of it. And it was a very modest house. It was not a big deal house. But I looked at it, and I looked at her, and I said, you know, you can live in a shack and still sweep the floors. And you can take care of what you can be a steward of what you have. Well, that's one of the things that I think has to be looked at. One of the reasons why school choice is so important is because it brings a level of competition into the public school arena, and it makes people recognize that sometimes they might have to do some things differently in order to be seen as achievers. Right now, there's no competition. You go to school where you go to school. It's your zip code that makes a difference for the vast majority of kids in Alabama. And, you know, why try? You know, we don't have a good PTA here. We don't get nothing. Nobody cares. Care. Just care about what you said this is your job. Care. And by the way, there are wonderful educators out there in some of the poorest schools who are doing a lot with little. And I know that because I've got educators in my family, both public school and private school, educators in my family. But I do know this. There are some that sit back right now and let the teachers union tell them that they're victims. And they choose not to look at the idea of competition among schools to be better. Why would you not? Everything else in life, we look at trying to be the best one of what we do. Why is it okay in education to settle for just being there? There's no merit in that whatsoever. You don't look at your job and say, today I intend to go and be adequate. We don't need adequate. We need people who are looking at how they can best take what they have and make more out of it. And if they never get another dime, how they can embrace the role that they have, consider it their calling, and minister to these kids in such a way that they teach them, not just house them. All right, there's my diatribe. That was totally off the cuff. Had not planned it. Boomer, is it time for a break? I mean, I just apparently done a monologue, didn't even realize it. By the way, Boomer's streaming all this on multiple platforms. How many platforms you got, Boomer? Tell the audience right now.
We have four platforms right now.
Four platforms going live right now.
Yep, four of them.
Besides radio.
Yeah.
So we got radio. Lots of radio.
Lots of radio. We got lots of video streaming right now. So we have video streaming on YouTube, on our website, on Instagram, and on Facebook.
Dang, man. All right, so that diatribe right there was heard all around the world on multiple platforms. You ready?
That's right.
All right, here's the thing, though. 1819 News has a story that came out November 19th. In case you're not familiar, the Alabama State Department of Education, because of a law that we passed in 2013 when I was in the legislature, is now required to post a statewide school report card and list whether or not, you know, schools have met a certain threshold. And, oh, by the way, they have to designate those that are failing. The failing schools, I believe, are the bottom 6%. All right? And because of the Alabama Accountability Act, one of the few forms of school choice that we have in the state of Alabama, the Alabama Accountability Act allows if a school is a failing school in that bottom 6%, that you are allowed to transfer out of it and potentially qualify for a scholarship to do so. All right. However, what's always fun, too, is when you recognize there's schools that it's not always about the failing schools, man. Let's celebrate the ones that are doing outstanding jobs. I was pretty excited to see that one of the top four schools in the entire state is literally the school, elementary school here in the Gadsden area where my son used to go. So Eura Brown Elementary School has one of the highest scores in the state. They scored an A of 100% out of a possible 100. Within the listening area, we also had high marks for Crestline Elementary in Mountain Brook, Liberty Park Elementary in Vestavia, Heritage Elementary in Madison, Brookwood Forest Elementary in Mountain Brook, Mountain Brook Elementary School, Mount Laurel Elementary School in Shelby County, and East Elementary in Vestavia. Those are some of your top 10 schools. There were two others in the Montgomery School District that also ranked as A's, one of which, by the way, is a magnet school. So there's that. Within the listening district, I mean, there's failing schools. The only failing school, I believe, on the list within our listening areas is Chapman Middle School in Huntsville, which scored an F, a 51 out of a possible 100 on the statewide school report cards. But, yeah, pretty stoked to see all of these schools, including the fact, since I know most of the teachers at Eura Brown Elementary School, several of whom are personal friends, proud to see them as being an A. But there's things going on within education in Alabama that are not just related to dollars. They're not. And you cannot possibly say that everything in life revolves around how much money you threw at it. I used to be so irritated. We'd be down there in the state legislature debating the budgets and talking about funding of different sorts. And it was a Democrat that would go to the microphone and go, "We don't adequately fund education in Alabama." Well, I got news. We rank 50th in the nation, but there's about half a dozen to 10 other states that spend less per child than we do, and they rank higher than us in the scores nationally. Huh. So apparently you can spend less than we spend and get a better result. That seems to imply that Alabama's got some things it might need to change as opposed to money it just needs to spend. One of the things that's very concerning, and I talked about it on the show. In fact, I had State Representative Terry Collins, who chairs the House Education Policy Committee, on the show, I guess about a month ago. This story broke about mid-October. AL.com has a piece on it. Alabama state officials on Thursday demanded better certification pass rates from the state's future teachers. So what happens is this. teachers take what is known, or future teachers take what is known as the praxis exam. And apparently the praxis exam, rather alarming, showed that Alabama in a state report has only about a 53% first-time pass rate. Now, there's a lot of reasons why that's being justified as, well, you know, some people take it like a practice test, or they really shouldn't have taken it in. They just want to see how they do, and that hurts the results. And then some people, you know, they don't try real hard because their school pays for it, so they didn't have the, like, the vested ownership in having paid for the test. Okay, crap. I'm calling crap on it. If you don't want those kind of things to happen, then don't let them happen. Make people be at a certain point in their education process, or make people have to pay for it themselves. I don't care. Remove those obstacles if you really think that's influencing the results. But nonetheless, right now what we're seeing is 53% is the first-time pass rate on the state exam, the praxis. And that's concerning. Huntington College Dean of Education Carolyn Corliss said, some students might not be putting their full effort in that first round of taking the test. Okay, that's bad too. Do we want a bunch of teachers that are like, I don't know, I'll just try it and see what happens? I mean, lawyers don't take the bar exam just to see what'll happen. I thought I'd take it and just see how it goes. This has got to change. But the budget that we got this year, please don't tell me we don't fund education enough, because we have funded education more every year over the last decade than ever in the history of the state of Alabama. In fact, this year alone, stand by, this year alone, we passed an $8.17 billion education budget, the biggest education budget ever in the history of the state of Alabama, since we became a state in the year 1819. Well, Phil, we didn't have billions of dollars in 1819. Whatever. The bottom line is this. We're upfunding education more every year, and our results are staying abysmal. Don't you think it might be time to do something different? Because you know the whole definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Well, yeah. So when we get back from this next break, we're going to move to the second part of this dipper. The first one was school money. We're going to start moving to school choice. And then top of the hour, national figure Dr. Corey DeAngelis from the American Federation for Children. You see him on Fox News and other outlets all the time. He'll be on to talk about it. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid, conservative, just plain right. Making it cool to be a conservative. So, listen, let me ask you a question. If you, let's say you move to a new town, and you get to that town, and you're looking to buy some groceries, and you realize there's not but one grocery store. I've used this analogy before. Some of y'all know where I'm going. But there's not but one grocery store in the town. So you go there, and the produce is like kind of sad. The lettuce is kind of wilted. The milk is pretty close to the expiration date. The meat counter is not very well stocked. You know, you're looking at it, you can't even find your choice of cereal. What kind of place is this? And it's the only one in town. Would you be surprised if you then learned that it's the only one in town because that's the one the city council said was allowed to be there? Why would this be? I don't know. The city council decided you're only allowed to have one grocery store, and it will be this grocery store. It doesn't matter whether they do a good job. It doesn't matter whether they stock the shelves. It doesn't matter what their prices are. It doesn't matter whether they have good customer service. It doesn't matter if they bag the groceries. It's the only grocery store in town. Well, what happens if the people say, you know what? Enough of this. We deserve better. And then Sunday, the city council goes, okay, fine. And they allow the open free market to occur, and another grocery store shows up, and it brings in better produce, good customer service, well lit, better hours. And next thing you know, the first grocery store is looking around realizing all their customer base is gone and they don't know what to do about it, except maybe do a better job at what they should have been doing all along. That's called the free market. The free market works when basically the government gets out of the way and allows for the idea of capitalism to occur unfettered, which, by the way, brings competition, which, by the way, makes it better for the consumer. Why don't we do that in education? Why don't we say in education, you know what? Where your zip code is not the sole determinant of where you go to school. Maybe, mom and dad, you should have the say. Maybe at some point in the course of deciding what is best for your child, you're actually allowed to determine what is best for your child. Maybe you look around and realize that, you know what? The school in my zip code just sucks. And there is no reason in the world why I should be required to have to move and sell our house or maybe get another job just to get my kid to a right school. And so what do? So then you literally look around and you realize it's only a few miles away to a school that scored much higher, where everything seems to be a little bit more, I don't know, empowered. And so you just move because you can. You take your kid to a different school because the free market's allowed. You're not confined to the sole source that government said you're allowed to use. So we don't allow that anywhere else. There's no town in America where they're going to say, we will not allow another grocery store. There's no town in America that's going to say, hey, you know what? If you want to build a widget, you have to build it this way. No, go build the better mousetrap and beat out all the other mousetrap builders. But in education, we do. In education, we let it sit there and fester. In education, we're content to take that model I just told you about having the single grocery store and say that government is allowed to dictate that we are only allowed to have that which is adequate. We cannot have anything that excels. We can't have something else that drives the competition into the broader arena of the market. We're literally stuck because government says so. Well, folks, that has got to end. School choice is the phrase often used to talk about how best we drive this to a better resolution for our kids. And I will say this, when it comes to the funding for education, and here's where I kind of combine the two portions of this dipper. This whole dipper is called school money, school choice. Let me just throw it out there for you. If you're talking to someone and they say, I don't know, I mean, school choice, I mean, the school board knows, right? I mean, the teachers, that's their job. They know, right? I mean, the state school board, they know things, right? Okay, let me ask you this. How do you feel about education? Because philosophically, when it comes to money for education, you have to ask yourself a question. Do I believe that those tax dollars that we pay into the system are there to support the system? Or do we believe they're there to support the education of the child? If you believe they're there to support the system, then you're content to say the zip code drives the train and you get to go to that school and that school only. If you believe, though, that the tax dollars are there to educate the child, then you should not care where that child goes to school as long as their tax dollars are being used most effectively for their benefit. And the second question you have to ask yourself is, who is the best to answer what is best for the child? Is it the system, the government, or is it the parent or legal guardian? And I believe as conservatives, the position should always be the parent or legal guardian is the first choice in saying what is best for the child's education. All right, we're going to come right back with a nationally renowned guest, Dr. Corey DeAngelis, the American Federation of Children. He's been on every news outlet in the nation talking about this very topic, school choice. He'll give us the broad view, tell us what's happening elsewhere, and maybe one day we'll actually see it happen in Alabama. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios, local, state, national. We cover down on all the issues, man. And like the dude just said, we are solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, listen, I'm pleased to bring back on someone who you may have seen on Fox and multiple other news outlets around the nation. He's a national spokesperson on the question of school choice. Dr. Corey DeAngelis, he's a senior fellow with the American Federation for Children. He's also the executive director at Educational Freedom Institute, an adjunct scholar at Cato Institute, senior fellow with the Reason Foundation. He's got numerous awards and has authored over 40 journal articles, book chapters, and other reports on education policy. PhD from University of Arkansas and has master's in economics from the University of Texas, San Antonio. I think I got most of it in there. Dr. Corey DeAngelis, how you doing today?
Hey, doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for making time for us. Listen, you were on once before, and I think about a year ago, talking about school choice. We went through an entire legislative session again with nothing on school choice. In fact, we had bills getting suppressed in the Alabama legislature. Never even made it out of committee. But give us the broad perspective. What are you seeing trend-wise around the nation right now in that regard?
Yeah, I think that was Senator Del Marsh's bill last year. Didn't get a vote, but that was such a shame. But other states have been passing up Alabama left and right when it comes to school choice. We had the year of school choice in 2021. In fact, 19 states expanded or enacted programs to fund students as opposed to systems. And then this year, in 2022, Arizona just won up all the states and went all in. With one-seat GOP majorities in their House and Senate, every Republican showed up, voted for their party platform issue in each chamber, and voted for school choice to allow every single family, regardless of background, regardless of income, to be able to take their children's state-funded education dollars, happens to be around $7,000 per student per year in Arizona,
right,
to the education provider of their choosing. You can take it to the public school. If you like your public school, you can keep your public school, but for real, and like with the whole doctor thing. But if not, you could take that funding to a private school, a charter school, or a home-based education option. And in Arizona, the families love it. I mean, they flooded the government website and crashed it in the initial weeks of the application opening window because families want this. I mean, we can cite polls all day long, but the expressed desires of the families when these programs become available to them is everything you need to know. And in Alabama, the latest polling that I've seen with a rolling 12-month average from Morning Consult finds that 77% of Alabama school parents support school choice in the form of education savings accounts, which is what they passed in Arizona. So look, and in Alabama, you've got 70 to 80% GOP majorities in the House and Senate. If Arizona can get it done with one seat, the slimmest of majorities, any other red state, particularly Alabama, should be able to get it done if the politicians will only listen to the parents, the kids' union, as opposed to the teachers' union.
Wow, so well said. You know, one of the things that strikes me, too, about Arizona, if I'm not mistaken, their governor was also very supportive and openly saying, send it to me and I'll sign it. Am I correct about that?
Yep, in his State of the State, Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has been a staunch supporter of educational freedom. One of his best quotes he said at that State of the State in January 2022 was, 50-plus years ago, politicians stood at the schoolhouse door to keep minorities out. Today, union-backed politicians stand at the schoolhouse door to keep minorities in. It's time to let these families free. And he had a standing ovation. And he did say, yes, let's expand school choice in any way we can this year. Send the bills to my desk and I will sign them. And he fought for it throughout the session. And this is Governor Ducey's legacy. This is the biggest school choice victory in U.S. history. It's the gold standard, what everybody's been fighting for. And it's the first government school monopoly domino to fall. I am confident that other red states will follow as well. I'm keeping my eyes on a ton of red states this coming session. We had 2021 was the year of the parent, the year of school choice. 2022 in the midterms was the year of the parent for many education freedom advocates. perhaps 2023 will be the year of educational freedom.
You know, and what I'm seeing too, Corey, is there are some places where it's becoming more of a bipartisan effort. In Florida, they maintain their Accountability Act, and even up it is a bipartisan issue. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I have an article here that says that the new governor-elect for Pennsylvania, Shapiro, I believe his name is, who is a Democrat, has openly expressed the idea that school choice may be necessary in his state, and has kind of rocked the teachers' union's world by saying that.
Yeah, look, this I wrote about this in the Wall Street Journal in an article called The School Choice Election Wave. It is becoming politically profitable for politicians to support parental rights in education because it is politically disastrous for them to oppose it. Look at what happened to Terry McAuliffe in Virginia when he said, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." Glenn Youngkin, the Republican, in a state that went 10 points to Biden the year before, won by 2 points overall, and with education voters by 6 points. So the GOP has a golden opportunity to become the parents' party, and some Democrats are seeing that, and they don't want their Terry McAuliffe moment to happen. So less than 2 months before Election Day, Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania switched his education platform to explicitly include Lifeline Scholarships, which is a form of education savings accounts, a bill that was championed and sponsored by a Republican that passed the Pennsylvania House last year. So that was a huge flip. We saw a similar flip in Illinois with Governor Pritzker openly supporting their tax credit scholarship program for low-income kids, a program that he vowed to get rid of in 2017 and 2018. So these are notable shifts. And some people may say, oh, these politicians were just like reading the tea leaves and they're just, you know, that it, maybe it wasn't a real change of heart. But you know what? At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter whether it was a real change of heart or if they were looking at the polls and seeing the political winds shift. At the end of the day, that high-profile Democrats who were up significantly in the polls felt compelled to signal to parents that they support school choice tells you all you need to know that this is becoming a political winner for politicians from both parties. And I think the GOP has to lead on it, though. Democrats aren't going to flip on the issue until Republicans make it hurt at the polls. And so I think this is what happened with Shapiro not wanting a Terry McAuliffe moment to happen. His opponent, Mastriano, was already calling him out for school choice hypocrisy. Shapiro went to private school all through K-12. He sent all of his kids to private school. And right after those accusations of hypocrisy started to come out, Shapiro flipped his platform. Same thing with J.B. Pritzker. He sent his kids to Chicago area private schools. And so it's politically beneficial to preempt those accusations of hypocrisy, to just support school choice for everybody, high income and low income.
Well, I mean, as we look at this too, one of the things that I think has to be looked, you know, given some consideration, is as conservatives, and you know, and everybody with an R by their name claims to be a conservative, and it's not always true, obviously, but as conservatives, we believe in the free market in the business environment. Why would we not believe in the free market in the education environment? If you have competition, if you have the ability to have one school excel and gather up more students because it's excelling, it drives the others to up their game. And yet we don't do that. And we suddenly sit back and say the zip code is allowed to create adequacy and that's enough. And I find that to be antithetical to conservatism overall.
Well, look, this school choice is explicitly on the Republican Party platform. If you don't support it, then why do you have an R next to your name? The thing is, in deeper red states, the teachers unions aren't stupid. They know they're not going to get a Democrat majority, so they invest heavily in the primaries.
Yeah.
I think in Alabama, the AEA invested about $4 million in political activity this year, mostly going to Republicans. And until voters wake up and parents start to pay attention to these things and hold politicians accountable, that's going to continue. In Tennessee, I was paying attention to their primaries. They had 10 Republicans in the House endorsed, funded by the teachers unions, and 9 of them lost their primary races in Tennessee this year. So families are waking up in other states. I don't know how it turned out in Alabama, but hopefully education freedom advocates fared well in the primaries and in the general election this year in Alabama. But parents need to pay attention, hold people accountable at the school board meetings, but continue to hold people accountable at the ballot box too. School choice is the only way to truly secure parental rights in education. You have some states, I don't know if Alabama did this, but they've banned CRT. And then now we have all these videos coming out where the administrators are openly admitting they're still teaching CRT anyway, and they're just calling it social emotional learning, or maybe they're even calling it student med. They just keep moving the goalposts, and these top-down bills to ban certain concepts or to promote other concepts. It's a whack-a-mole problem where the employees in the system are still going to do what they want anyway, and the ultimate form of accountability must be from the bottom up. As you said best, conservatives support the free market and people being able to vote with their feet to providers that work best for them. School choice is the way to do that with education. We already do it with college. We have Pell Grants and the GI Bill. Veterans don't have to take their money for college to a community college or a public university. Veterans can take their GI Bill funding to a private religious university if they want. We should do the same thing with K-12 education and fund people, not buildings.
Well, absolutely. And listen, Corey, in the last minute we've got here, I had State Senator Del Marsh in studio. He just chose not to run again this term, so he just left office a few weeks ago. He was the school choice advocate in the Alabama State Senate, and Representative Charlotte Meadows, who was the school choice true champion in the House, she also did not get reelected because they carved up her district during reapportionment and made it harder. They threw the teachers union a bone and made it harder for her to get reelected. And so we lost both of our House and Senate champions for school choice. I asked Del Marsh in studio when he was here with us, who's going to take up the mantle? And he said, Phil, at this point, I really have no idea. We've got to find a new champion here in Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I'm willing to go to Alabama and educate some of the legislators on the issue so they feel more confident in pushing for it. But look, this is the moment. Parents have woken up. They're never going back to sleep. All these other states are passing up Alabama right now, particularly red states. This is a Republican Party platform issue. There should be no problem for Alabama, a state that has 70 to 80% Republican control in each chamber and a Republican governor as well. This is a no-brainer. I mean, if states like Arizona, again, one-seat majorities, and they were able to pass the biggest, most expansive program of all time in U.S. West Virginia just did it as well. A lot of people say, maybe rural states may not have as much of a feasibility for school choice. West Virginia is one of the top three most rural states in the country. They also have universal school choice. No income limits. Every single family is eligible, regardless of income, and they can take their kids' state-funded education dollars to public, private, charter, or homeschool of their choice.
Wow.
We should fund people, not buildings. Other states have done it, and Alabama can do it too.
Well, I tell you what, Corey, I appreciate your time today, and I'm going to try and find a group of legislators that are willing to sit down and hear from you directly, and if we can arrange that, I look forward to being there with you when the time comes. So thank you for your time today. Thank you for your championship effort in this regard, and stay in the fight.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. That was Dr. Corey DeAngelis. Man, what a great spokesperson. American Federation for Children, a national advocate. I mean, it's an honor to have him on the show because he literally is the guy that Fox News calls when they need a compliment or a comment on school choice. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that one. We're going to move to number three on the Triple Dipper here when we get back from this break. Talking about shadow bans. Oh, Lord. Have you heard the news? Because we actually have news. We can see it now. Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, by the way, folks, I got to tell you, today's Friday, and tomorrow morning be Saturday. Well, yeah, Phil, that's the way it works. But no, what I'm saying is this. How about Saturday morning? You're looking at, do I want to mess up the kitchen? But I don't want to eat just the typical fast kind of meal that I have to get on a work day. I want something that says, it's Saturday. How about Just Love Coffee Cafe? Let me just explain to you. When you look at Just Love Coffee Cafe's menu, it is epic. And, oh, by the way, it's unique. Like the waffles they have. I mean, you might want to get the berry waffles that have all the berries and things on it. You might want to just get good old waffles with syrup. Or you, if they got the flying pig waffle. Oh man, just take a look. Look at their menu online and be amazed. And then, by the way, at that point, you're also saying, how about if I get me a big old fat cappuccino or a latte or an espresso or just some of their award-winning dry roast coffees ground fresh, and I enjoy the coffee, sit there, read a book, enjoy a Saturday morning, and you're not messing up the kitchen. Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations in our area, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville. You really ought to check them out. Their menu's unique. The womlet, oh man, the omelet that cooks in a waffle iron filled with everything, including tater tots, just trust me, it's good stuff. Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville. Saturday mornings could not get better. Boomer, you've been tracking this stuff on Elon Musk and the latest Twitter dump?
Well, yes, okay. To an extent, yes, I have, because I need to read what just came out the other day. But, I mean, just... Was it today or last night?
Last night. They had a new dump last night.
And all I've heard is just ramblings about it. So
you're about to hear some more ramblings in a minute.
I'm excited to hear about it. So I heard that he was going to do another dump, so I was pumped to hear it. I just haven't actually read it myself.
Well,
yet.
you're gonna get an earful here in a minute, obviously, because you're wearing headphones. But nonetheless, but yeah, I mean, so what we're finding out now is that all the testimony that Twitter executives gave before Congress under oath was a lie. Ooh. They were flat out saying, no, we don't shadow ban.
Under oath. So what it like, okay, I understand under oath, all that stuff. But
that's
now
a bad
that it,
thing.
Yeah, it's a very bad thing. So what would happen?
I don't know. I mean, that's a question I have, because, you know, you have, they have General Michael Flynn, who almost lost everything in the world because they tried to say he lied to the FBI when it was almost a deceptive interview. These folks are sitting there in front of Congress, sworn in, providing testimony to Congress. And literally, I watched a video this morning of Jack Dorsey, the former CEO of Twitter, literally being asked by a congressman, do you shadow ban? No. Do you give preference to political figures based on their party? No. And this went on and on and on. And now we're finding, not only did they, we can see it, because
wow.
you know how you work the website and all that for
right side.
You know, you're seeing the backside of the website, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
The backside of everybody's Twitter accounts had buttons for their administrative use, things like do not amplify and blacklist. And I mean, it went on and on and on, and it was predominantly against conservative causes.
Wow,
dude, it gets worse.
Man.
I can name names. We're gonna name some names here in a minute.
All
right, folks,
ready to hear it.
We're about to take the next break, but when we come back from that, I'm in number three of the Triple Dipper on a Friday afternoon. Shadow bans. What came out of the second dump of Twitter documents? Well, a lot, actually. And not the least of which is the tweet that Elon Musk sent out today when he was asked, are there any politicians who were running for office that were shadow banned? I'll tell you about the answer to that. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about down south of Birmingham to all the way up north of Huntsville. We got Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, I'm in number three of the Triple Dipper as we wrap up our day here on Right Side, wrap up our week, really. And Boomer, I'm just looking at the live stream, man. You have upped the game, brother. You have so upped the game.
It's taken a while. I've actually been working on this for like a month to get it all ready.
Wow.
Trying to get it square on. There's a few kinks, obviously, if you've been watching, but it'll get better.
I will say, though, I'm a little concerned by how often you try to posture your Alabama symbol on your jacket into the camera.
I'm just making sure people see.
Lord. No, but you know what? The live stream is so cool. And so you've got it all now. Tell everybody again where it's.
Yeah, so we got the live video stream. We're streaming to our website at rightsideradio.org and go to the live stream tab. You can watch either the live video stream or there's a audio stream right below it. If you're just driving, you just want to listen to the audio stream. Then you can go to YouTube and just, you know, look up Right Side Radio. You can go to Facebook, look up Right Side Radio, or on our Instagram page as well. If you're an Instagrammer, go to Right Side Radio. That's our handle, and you can actually watch it live there as well.
So the thing I have to say is, no matter where you are in the big wide world, go to the World Wide Web, and somewhere out there you can find a link to us. And no matter where you is, there we is.
Yes, that is correct. And it's just going to get better.
Excellent job there, Boom Shakalaka. Thanks. Good job.
Thank you.
All right, hey, listen, I'm in number three of the Triple Dipper. So in case you have not heard, Twitter is rocking the world. I mean, so liberals are freaking out, but they're freaking out because they're being made known. They can't do a thing about it. They can't stop what's happening right now. And they are raging over this. And the liberals are like, oh, Elon Musk is the downfall of Western civilization. No, he's not. He's literally pointing out what you guys have been doing, you bunch of jugheads. And so here's the deal. Elon Musk has committed to letting the world see what has been happening behind closed doors, things that we conservatives could feel all along. I mean, I got locked out of my Twitter account probably four or five times, you know, and it was sometimes it'd be like a day in the penalty box. But, you know, you come back, you're like, what was I even out for? And then one time, I think I published something about COVID and alternative treatments or something like that. And somebody reported it. And next thing I know, I was locked out and I was told I could not have my account back until I deleted the tweet. No kidding.
Wow.
And you know, it just becomes like this tug of war with like, okay. But yet it seemed like the conservative opinions. Meanwhile, some things were allowed to stay up on the Twitter feeds that you look at and go, why is that even allowed? That's awful. Okay. That being said, the information is coming out. We're in what I would call Twitter dump number two, all right? And it's been pretty significant. This is the one that has been more expose than we'd seen in the first one. The first one was very telling. We were beginning to see things. This one shows us that everything that we felt was happening was happening. So if you're not familiar, there's this term called shadow bans. Shadow bans are where you feel like your account is, like, not working well, like, no one's seeing your tweets, you're not getting much response, or maybe you're having trouble. People are telling you they're trying to find your account to follow you and they can't find you, and yet you're looking at it and your account's still active. What is that? Well, that's because in the background, we're finding out now, Twitter employees were literally making their own decisions about whether or not you should be allowed to be seen. They were masking accounts. They were suppressing tweets. They were literally choosing to not just suppress certain stories, but to suppress whole accounts. And they had different categories who had to do this. Some executives were allowed to do what they call blacklisting. Others were allowed to do things like suppressing the ability to boost the account. Others were allowed to do things like spiking their notifications, meaning they might not get notified that someone was looking at their stuff. Why? Because it keeps them from what's doing is called trending on social media. Well, we have Twitter executives who testified before Congress, to include Jack Dorsey, the former CEO of Twitter, who I watched the video this morning as he testified before Congress, and he was asked, do you shadow ban? No. He was very simple answers. No. Do you, and I've forgotten the phrase, but it was basically, do you take action against accounts that are based on one political party over another? No. and went down the line. And we're finding out now all of it's not true. None of it's true. One of the things I think we're going to find out, too, is that they deliberately intervened in potential elections. There's a tweet that came out this morning. Ian Miles Chong, it's spelled C-H-E-O-N-G. Ian Miles Chong has been known for really getting in the mix and getting out there and doing investigative and individual reporting, independent reporting, that nobody else does. And he's been beaten up by Antifa for it and everything else. He tweeted out this morning. He said, so here's a question for Elon Musk. Were any political candidates, either in the U.S. or elsewhere, subject to shadow banning while they were running for office or seeking re-election? Elon Musk himself replied back with one word, yes. We're going to find that out sometime soon. So what candidates were running for office that it turns out that one of their primary forms of communication was social media and it was being suppressed? I can't wait to find out. But here's the thing. There are two reporters. If you're not tracking this, there's two reporters. One's a guy named Matt Tybee, or Tybee, I believe. Yeah, Matt Tybee, who has a Substack column that he does. He and another lady named Barry Weiss. Barry Weiss, I believe, used to work for the New York Times. She's the one who quit and wrote an excoriating open letter to the New York Times about their bias. And she is the other person who's been allowed to review the Twitter documents and create their stories. The only stipulation was, here's everything. Just do the story first on Twitter so it drives people to Elon's own platform, and then you know, publish it in your own way wherever you want to after that. So what I'm going to do right now is this. I'm going to go through the things that Barry Weiss posted about the latest dump, and this is going to boggle your mind. Number one, a new Twitter file investigation reveals that teams of Twitter employees build blacklists, prevent disfavored tweets from trending, and actively limit the visibility of entire accounts. Twitter once had a mission to, quote, give everyone the power to create and share ideas. Along the way, barriers nevertheless were erected. Example number one. Take, for example, it says Stanford University's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, who argued that COVID lockdowns would harm children. Twitter secretly placed him on a trends blacklist, which prevented his tweets from trending. And you can see it. There's a picture there of the backside of his account with the highlighted button that's already been clicked, Trends Blacklist. Or consider, it says, the popular right-wing talk show host Dan Bongino, who at one point was slapped with a search blacklist. And you can see it. There's the button clicked, search blacklist, meaning that if people search for his account, they might not find it. Or how about this? Twitter set the account to conservative activist Charlie Kirk to do not amplify. What does that mean? That means he could not boost his account. He could not get his stories out. He couldn't even pay to have it broadcast out further. Twitter denied that it does such things. In 2018, Twitter's Vijaya Gadde, the head of legal policy and trust at Twitter, and another one named Kayvon Bekpour, head of product, said, we don't shadow ban. And they added, we certainly don't shadow ban based on political viewpoints or ideology. What many people call shadow banning, Twitter executives simply called visibility filtering. That was their name, visibility filtering. Multiple high-level sources confirmed its meaning. Think about visibility filtering as being a way for us to suppress what people see to different levels. It's a very powerful tool, one Twitter employee told Barry Weiss. It goes on from there and going down the line. It's very disturbing to read. They actually had whole departments. One was called the Strategic Response Team Global Escalation Team, or SRT-GET. It handled 200 cases a day sometimes to decide how many people were allowed to see certain accounts. But there was another one, another department called the SIPPES, the Site Integrity Policy and Policy Escalation Support. They were the ones who were at a higher level than just the rank-and-file moderators. They were the secret group of executives who could get in there and stop anything they wanted to, and they did on a regular basis. And this is where Barry Weiss says the most politically sensitive decisions got made. Like one of those was Libs of TikTok, believe it or not. Libs of TikTok was actually blacklisted and designated as a do not take action without consulting the SIPPES. That means only the executives at Twitter could unlock that account. Or how about the one that, where'd it go here? And by the way, in Twitter denied that over and over again. But an internal memo about SIPPIS from October 2022, after her seventh suspension from Libs of TikTok, they acknowledge that LTT has not directly engaged in behavior violative of the hateful conduct policy, meaning she really hadn't done anything wrong. We just don't like her, so we went ahead and blacklisted her. It's unbelievable, y'all. It goes on and on from there. Let me stop there and take a call real quick. Is that Lee? Line one, Lee from Huntsville. Hey, Lee, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm listening to you on iHeartRadio, driving back from Birmingham. I love to be able to do that.
Well, good deal.
So I wanted to make sure if every single person hasn't read Orwell's 1984, they need to immediately stop what they're doing and find it.
No kidding. Yep.
Orwell was prophetic. He's proven that over and over. This is a prime example of who controls the past controls the future, and who controls the present controls the past. Which is a very famous quote from that book, but demonstrating that the past exists in the minds of people based on memories and or what is written. And when you can manipulate what is real, when you can manipulate facts, thus as they do on Twitter, by blacklisting some or depersoning, which is also another idea from 1984, people, so that people tend to feel alone in their ideas. And when Twitter is what we call shadow batting, or what they call, I don't know, what I don't remember how you put it, like influence dampening or whatever.
Visibility moderating.
However they want to finagle it. It is making, when you feel that others understand what you are saying and agree with you, it's a powerful force for good. I mean, for evil too, but when you're out there speaking in the wilderness is when people get discouraged. And that's exactly what they were doing. They were putting these conservative voices into the wilderness of not being heard. I want to know when all of them are going to receive some sort of, a subpoena, something. They need to, I guess they were brought in front of Congress. It's illegal to lie to Congress, right?
My thought exactly, yes.
Why are they not going to be arrested? They have already done this. Look what they've done to conservatives. They've arrested them. Look at, for either not talking to Congress when subpoenaed, like Bannon, or, others. When are they getting arrested? I just want to know.
Well, and I don't know if you heard this part too, Lee, but a while ago I said that there was actually a tweet from Elon Musk this morning that said that there were actually political candidates who, while they were running for office, were actually blacklisted. And I think the next dump is going to tell us who that was.
Absolutely, and they need to. And that's manipulating elections. That deserves real jail time. What they're doing deserves jail time. They are, on a massive scale, the people who own them, YouTube, the Alphabet Group in general, which is Sundar Pichai. And I have to crack up because, like Liz Warren saying, one person, Elon Musk, should not have control over what everyone sees or what is determined. And please, there's three or four people right now that have control over that. And she's complaining about one.
Yeah.
She's a joke. Yes, they're all a joke.
Well, she is. Hey, Lee, I'm up against the break. I gotta take a break right now, Lee, but you have a great weekend. Your content is always good. Thank you for calling in.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Boomer, take the break, man. We'll come right back and sort of wrap this up for the day, for the week, really. But yeah, shadow banning. It's apparently real. It's been happening. And it's not been something that is just innocent or trying to keep, porn out of the hands of kids. No, no. It's been trying to keep the conservative viewpoint completely suppressed so it can't get out in the electronic public square. Ain't good. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Y'all, listen, we're in the last part of the Triple Dipper here, shadow bans. And I went ahead and just weeded through my stack of stuff, knowing full well that I can't get to every bit of the resources that I had for this show today, and brought it down to this one article. New York Post, article that came out today. It says, Twitter and Democrats lied, and lied again about censorship. To Lee's point a moment ago, when Lee called in, she talked about George Orwell's book, 1984. This article from the New York Post starts off in a similar fashion. It says, 1984 author George Orwell warned that if thoughts corrupt language, language can also corrupt thought. That line has never been more relevant than in the aftermath of the second release of Twitter documents this week. The article goes on to say, many liberals had denied the social media giant was engaged in censorship by using the more pleasant term content modification or visibility filtering and amplification limits. But now we know, it says, that Twitter was not only banning dissenting voices on subjects ranging from COVID to climate change, but was actually throttling or suppressing the traffic for disfavored writers. This is a big deal, y'all. This is a big, hairy deal. Because here's the thing. Twitter has become the electronic public square. It is protected right now because it is not technically journalism, and yet it acts like journalism when it has a board of editors that decide what gets out. And yet journalists can be held to account for a standard or ethics, and Twitter is not. Well, Twitter had a bunch of snowflakes in there that coming off their San Francisco mentality where the you know, Twitter was originally headquartered, that literally went after conservatives on a regular basis. The article I've got here from the New York Post goes on to say, some of us have been raising concerns over Twitter's massive censorship for years, including what I called, this is the author saying, Jonathan Turley wrote this piece, called the emergence of a shadow state where corporations carry out censorship that the Constitution would otherwise ban. So it is still early to determine the possible legal implications, but there are some areas of immediate concern that need to be looked at. First of all, he points out, Jonathan Turley is, you know, a legal scholar. He said that one of the things we know now, Elon Musk has already said that some data may have been intentionally hidden or destroyed despite the fact that Congress has asked for them to preserve those documents for a congressional investigation. If that's the case, it could be obstruction. Second, he says, destruction of documents can also prove relevant as part of an investigation into whether false statements had been made under oath because, like I said earlier, Twitter executives have been denying secret suppressions under oath in public and before Congress. I mean, Jack Dorsey himself says, we don't have a censoring department. That's his quote. He also denied there was shadow banning, all this while he was under oath in front of Congress. But it turns out, the article points out, Jonathan Turley says, you don't need a censoring department if the entire company is acting as a massive censoring and suppression machine. Thirdly, he said, there's the growing question of censorship by surrogate. What he's saying there is that basically when you control political speech, if the government says, hey, fix that thing for us, and they do, the government go, we didn't do it. Nah, but you asked for it, didn't you? You used a surrogate to take care of that for you. It wasn't the Biden administration per se censoring your thoughts on COVID, but they were certainly coordinating through the FBI that met with Twitter on a weekly basis. All the Orwellian euphemisms, Jonathan Turley says, and cheery titles will no longer disguise Twitter's raw censorship. Once empowered to determine who can be heard, Twitter executives showed how censorship can become an insatiable appetite for speech control. Sitting in their San Francisco headquarters, the so-called trust of executives found an array of conservative views unworthy to be heard, and they filtered out free speech. That's, folks, is a problem. And I think dump number three is already in Matt Taibbi's hands, and we're waiting to see what comes next. All right, folks, what an amazing week. We got more of this next week. Boomer and I back here Monday at 2. Y'all have a great weekend. We'll be right back. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right.